This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
It is Friday. It is good to be catching up with you here on the Country Hour. And as you've probably heard by now, Western Australia currently has two tropical cyclones off its northern coast. Just earlier today, TC Odette became official, and of course, TC Seroja already there lurking around. No real impact on the mainland of WA today, just a few showers and thunderstorms here and there on the western Pilbara coast. But there is a chance of some damaging winds on the Exmouth Peninsula, say 90 to 100 kilometres an hour tomorrow afternoon. That is going to be fairly brief, just a few hours of risk that afternoon. And then TC Odette will head away and weaken. Then Seroja comes in and you'll see the impacts from sort of Sunday. There is a tropical cyclone watch out now for Seroja, just from Coral Bay to Lancelin. And then from Sunday, some rain, sort of moderate to heavy falls across most of the southwest land division. And if you are close to the track of the cyclone, you could get between sort of 50 to 80 millimetres of rain. That's in parts of the southwest land division. Now, I'm not the expert on this. Luke Huntington is. He's going to be on deck at the Bureau of Meteorology and going through the very latest information on the situation for you after the news headlines at 12:30 today. And also you'll head off to the Kimberley just before the news at 1 today. You'll meet some of the future rodeo superstars who are in training right now at a potty riding and stock handling school in Kununurra. 12:07. This is the Country Hour here on ABC, right across Western Australia. Lengthy delays in WA's grain shipping schedule are already costing WA farmers who are being offered grain prices $20 to $30 a tonne below some of the current prices on offer on the international market. Now, if you've heard on the Country Hour yesterday, the state's main grain handler, the CBH Group, says a shortage of workers, namely truck and train drivers, is just making it longer to get that grain to the ports. The average turnaround for a grain ship is about 4 days. In one case at the Geraldton port, that's blown out to 23 days, Kwinana 16 days, Albany 12, and Esperance 11 days. If grain exporters decide those delays are to become, well, the norm, the status quo, they're likely to continue offering lower grain prices to WA growers for some time to come. Jerome Critch is a grain marketing advisor for Plan Farm. He says the shipping delays are directly responsible for the grain price discounts on offer here in WA.
The first time we noticed something was going on was when we were seeing some really good international prices getting paid for wheat and barley in particular, into places like Asia, into the Middle East, and it wasn't being reflected in our local cash prices, and particularly in the Geraldton port zone. So we were seeing international prices going up or holding firm at really good numbers, and we were seeing Geraldton prices coming back pretty quickly, and also Esperance and Albany and Kwinana prices also starting to fall back. So we just couldn't work out what was going on, why WA farmers weren't getting the benefit of the really high international prices. And over a few weeks, we started to piece it together and realised there seemed to be an issue at getting grain onto boats. And, yeah, had that confirmed speaking to a number of buyers.
CBH is suffering from a range of problems at the moment with the supply chain, but there are other international factors at play as well with shipping. What are those?
Yeah, as always, all roads or all boats lead to China, so that's been a big factor. Their forecast to increase their grain imports, so just their grain imports alone, from about 25 million tonne a year ago to about 50 million tonne, and they're looking to boost their grain stocks. Most of that's been corn coming out of the US and soybean coming out of Brazil, but also, yeah, plenty of wheat and barley and sorghum as well. So they've taken up a lot of the shipping capacity. You've also seen a big increase in the price of oil from sort of $25 a barrel a few from last year up to about $60 a barrel at the moment. So that's increased a bit to the shipping cost. And potentially a few ships were decommissioned during the COVID crisis. So, yeah, restocking post-COVID, or hopefully soon to be post-COVID, and maybe an increase in fuel costs as well.
So how much have shipping prices increased?
It's increased from around about $10,000 a day for standard Panamax vessel up to about $30,000 a day. So, yeah, divide that by 0.76, which is our Aussie dollar, and it comes to roughly 40,000 Aussie dollars a day to have a ship on the water.
It's a staggering amount of money, and I imagine that that also would increase demurrage fees, so the fees that the shippers charge for any hold-ups. And we've heard over the last couple of days that there's been some hold-up with grain fleet in Western Australia currently. Do you know how much demurrage fees are?
It probably depends a little bit on the contract that's been signed by the exporter and by the ship owner, and also potentially by the storage and handler in terms of who picks up the tab. But you could roughly say it's the same as the shipping costs. So demurrage would be around about $30,000 a day for that boat to sit there, which makes me pretty anxious. I get anxious looking at the meter go up on a taxi while I'm sitting at the light. So it'd be horrible being a buyer sitting there watching your profit, or now potentially your loss, going up by $30,000 a day.
Who pays the demurrage fees?
It comes down to whatever contract gets signed between the exporter and the storage and handler, but more often than not, from what I gather, it's the exporter that would be picking up the tab for their boat sitting out there waiting to get loaded.
With delays sort of looking at 20 plus days in Geraldton, how does this affect you and other grain marketers and obviously the grain growers as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So being a grain marketing advisor, I just work on behalf of the farmer and negotiate prices with the buyer. So I'm probably not personally affected, but certainly farmers are going to be affected in the form of lower prices. And that was the first indication we got, was Geraldton in particular weren't getting the prices that we were seeing in Kwinana, and even Kwinana wasn't getting the prices that we were seeing internationally. So old crop prices have already been really badly affected to the tune of probably $20-$30 a ton relative to what we were seeing internationally. And then there's also the reputational risk. So CBH has been, or WA has been, able to get a premium against the East Coast and South Australia for grain. One of the reasons is good reputation of getting grain onto boats in good time and right quality and getting them off. So that's been getting us a premium. So we may start to see that premium erode until WA can turn around that issue.
So what's the risk to West Australian grain growers in both the, you've talked about short term, but is there a long term risk as well?
Yeah, it's just if the buyers are concerned that they'll have to start fronting up with demurrage costs of $20,000-$30,000 a day, so roughly $1 a tonne for a 50,000 tonne vessel. So if they're a bit concerned that they might have their vessel sitting there for 10 days waiting to get filled, then they'll err on the side of caution and probably quote to the farmer a price $10 less to build in that risk. So they just start to build in a risk.
As you see it, Jerem, is this a problem that could have been avoided by CBH?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. You'd have to probably speak to CBH management about that and the CBH board, and I suppose also to a degree CBH shareholders, which I'm not any of those. So it's probably a pretty good question to put to them. It certainly has been a bit of a surprise that a lot of these things seem to have occurred all at the same time, or maybe they had been occurring and we just hadn't noticed because we didn't have that really tight or that fully booked shipping stem, as it's called, trying to get grain into markets before Northern Hemisphere new crop comes on board. So maybe it's just something we've noticed more this year and throwing COVID. But like I say, that's really a question for probably CBH management and CBH board.
It's CBH's job to run an as efficient as possible network, but does that cause problems at the other end?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I suppose in this case, CBH wears two hats to a degree. They're trying to run a really efficient operations or storage and handling system, which is good for the grower, But at the same time, they really need to maximise the prices that the farmers are getting paid, which means they need to provide a pretty premium service to the exporters. So just like a farmer, if they're not reinvesting in the right places, then there might be some secondary costs later on. So that's the balancing act that CBH is faced with here, as are all storage and handlers around the world.
Grain Marketing Advisor for Plan Farm, Jerem Critch, speaking to Lucinda Jose. 12:15 here on the Country Hour. Rod Madden is a Morrowa grain grower and former grower director on the CBH board. He stepped down just before last year's CBH AGM. Now, Rod, has this bottleneck at the ports and delays to the shipping schedule been an issue just bubbling away in the background for CBH for many years now?
I wouldn't say many years, but it's been an insidious thing, but that's been creeping up for many, many years. And in fact, since the grain industry was deregulated, the AWB used to buy the majority of the grain and they spread it out, their sales over the 12 months. What we've seen now is an increase in production and a compression of the sales with the same infrastructure, people, and logistics in place, and it's impossible. So it's just been getting worse and worse, I'd say, for probably five or 10 years.
Okay, so obviously it was a discussion point at CBH in the time that you were there too. Was it raised on a regular basis that something needs to be done about this point in the supply chain?
Well, any issue that's noticed or observed by a director in the industry is should be and is reported to the board. So I can't tell you what happens at the board level, but I can certainly say that on a number of occasions, both growers and directors gave notice to management who I think were quite well aware of it.
What is this ultimately going to cost CBH and the growers? I mean, we've already heard it's already costing the growers sort of getting $20 to $30 knocked off some of the current prices that are on offer on the international market. So that cost effect is happening right now.
That's correct. It did. The magnitude did surprise me somewhat. If it's, say, $20 a tonne, over 15 million tonne, that's $300 million a year. And putting it into perspective, storage and handling costs are $10 a tonne, say, and fobbing charges $19. So that's less than $30. It's costing as much in the grain being discounted, the price being discounted, as it is for the whole storage and handling system. So something is radically wrong. We're just not getting the logistics and the infrastructure sorted out. The infrastructure is being, the cost, the capital injection into the infrastructure has all been on receiving and storing the grain, and very little has been spent on the outloading and logistics and loading of ships. And that's where the issue lay.
One of the points that really was repeated time and time again yesterday through the text messages coming through was the relationship that the group, the CBH group, has with some of the contractors, and a lot of them texting through talking about that relationship, that trust, the prices being paid. Do you think that needs some attention too when it comes to negotiating those contracts with the truck drivers, for example?
That's correct. I listened with interest to the text that you were reading out yesterday, and if I was a director still, I would be very, very concerned that they're looking, or management are looking at reducing the costs, their input costs from external, rather than making the supply chain more efficient and effective by putting in proper infrastructure, outloading, etc. And I think what's happening is that good people are exporting into the mining industry. There's a lot of competition there now. And I think that mining will be around for a fair time. And the culture of the organisation has to change. It's got a really bad feel about the culture at the moment, which has been expressed in the last two AGMs.
What do you mean? What specifically would you point to?
The culture of the organisation is, it's a mean sort of a culture within CBH. Everything's confidential. And I just would like to see a cultural shift and a cultural change in from the board all the way through the organisation. They've got to be less mean and tough with their suppliers, because suppliers will find another outlet for their goods and services.
Is it operating more like a profit driven business model today than more of a cooperative philosophy? Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I do. I think they're trying to reduce the visible cost to the growers, so they're taking the charges for storage and handling down to $10, saving a couple of dollars there, and saving a couple of dollars on fobbing charges, etc. But if that's coming at a cost of $20 to the end price of grain, then the net benefit is negative $16 a ton. And that's not the way that the cooperative model should be viewed at. So I don't know what the directors have set for the short-term incentive for the CEO, but the short and long-term incentive of the CEO is critical if you're going to go into these bonus-type areas that the board now seems to be involved in. You've got to get it right. If you don't get the STIs and the LTIs correct for the CEO, it'll just go pear-shaped big time. And I think that's what's happening. It is going pear-shaped. And really, you need to talk to the chairman to find out what the bonuses are for the CEO, and why is the overall supply chain not being taken into consideration. And by supply chain, I mean the price at the end of the supply chain that you're getting from the international market. If it's discounted $20 or $30 a tonne, it's just not working.
Rod, good to talk to you. Thank you.
No worries. See you, Belinda.
Morawa grain grower Rod Madden, 22 past 12. And in other CBH news today, the co-op is starting what's called a request for proposal, or an RFP process, to look for above rail providers, so a company to manage the train drivers, basically, to operate its locomotives. Now, you'll remember 10 years ago, the co-op purchased its own fleet of trains, and CBH says this means it's able to stop inflationary increases in sort of freight costs and hold freight rates flat, which is great for WA grain growers. Rail company Watco currently has the contract to operate CBH's trains, but that 10-year agreement is set to expire this time next year. Can't believe it's been 10 years already. Well, next year anyway. As you know, access to train drivers to operate the co-op's fleet of 28 locomotives and about 570 wagons is one of the things that's just slowing down the grain logistics at the moment. And CBH has already called on another rail operator, Aurizon, just to help out for the season and move that grain around. Now, the co-op says several rail companies, including Watco, have been invited to submit a proposal for the operation, service and maintenance of rail equipment. And that whole process is expected to be finished later this year, and the new contracts should take effect at the beginning of May next year. 23 past 12.
You're with Belinda Barischetti for the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Not far away from the news headlines at 12:30, and then off to the Bureau of Meteorology and taking a real close look at that very interesting situation off the coast of Western Australia, off the northern coast, with the formation of two cyclones just off the Pilbara coast at the moment. First, though, the contrasting fortunes of two staple WA crops are creating some headaches for growers who are trying to adjust their programs before seeding. On the one hand, you've got China apparently restricting Australian exports of hay, which is making farmers a bit nervous about going ahead with those plantings this year. And on the other hand, sky-high prices for canola, and that's creating a flood of interest from growers who are keen to tap into that oil seed market. Evan Hall is a mixed enterprise farmer from Woodnilling, which is about 2 hours north of Albany. He says the situation is pretty tricky with seeding about to get underway.
We've bumped our canola program up this year. We've sort of managed to sneak our canola program down a bit for the last two seasons, but we're in a traditional heavy canola growing area, and we're sort of pushing back up to 40% canola this year. There's a few factors in that. One, partly rotationally, but secondly, what's happening in the hay industry at the moment with the lack of fodder imports into China, or exports into China, I should say. Hay plantings, I'm thinking, are going to be down. They certainly are for us.
To what extent is the price for canola influencing your thinking?
It's certainly helpful, but the big picture is your longer-term rotation, not snookering yourself for several years of crop growing rather than chasing things around. But it's nice, don't get me wrong, but we're generally fairly large percentage canola growers. So
now, I know you can't speak for everyone, Evan, but what's your sense of what others in your region and even more broadly are going to do with respect to canola? Do you expect to see more people putting it in this year or in larger amounts?
Absolutely. I think as much as the pricing, a good start helps. So certainly people around our area have stopped. If the start's not right, are certainly backing off a long way on their canola programs, and certainly to the point of none, which is, you know, quite a change for this year in the last 5 years, because once upon a time, only 5 years ago, every year everyone would have some canola, where now that's not necessarily the case, but the start looks good and the high prices help. It'll just tip people over the edge. Yep, we'll do it. But I guess then comes to, if you haven't set that plan early, are you going to be able to get everything you need to do it?
I mean, as you mentioned, you're in a traditional canola growing area anyway. Do you think that sort of northern and eastern areas might take up the cudgel a little bit this year?
Definitely, Dan. As far as I know, there's been good summer rainfall for eastern and northern areas, and it's where the big areas are. If they start putting in small percentages of their program in canola, it still equates to a huge canola planting for the state. So, yeah, look, I'd expect there's going to be a huge amount of canola going this year.
I mean, if there is so much extra interest in canola this year compared with a normal year, is that affecting the availability of, you know, certain supplies?
Yeah, sure. Is hybrid canola seeds getting very difficult to come by, and the choice in varieties is long gone. I think there is still some available, but we did make a small change last week on our program upon light of the changes in the hay market at the moment. So just getting enough canola seed for one extra paddock wasn't particularly easy. It is available, but you certainly don't have the choice of, or you don't get your first choice, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Have you ever encountered that before?
Yeah, look, the hybrid seed game is always reasonably tight. You've got to be, generally speaking, got to be organised fairly early to get what you want and not be disappointed.
But still, perhaps a reflection of underlying demand.
Yeah, I think it's certainly be exacerbated this year.
You touched on it briefly at the beginning, Evan, but what's confidence like in the region?
Oh, I think everyone's feeling pretty good certainly in our part of the world. We're in a reliable area, relatively, and we don't miss out a whole lot. We're on the back of a string of good seasons, so there's not a whole lot of reason for people not to be feeling pretty good about the season and how things are looking. Good prices, looking like a decent start, and input prices have crept up a bit this year, but are still historically pretty good. So, you know, there's a fair bit to be positive about, in my view.
That's Woodnilling grower Evan Hall catching up with Daniel Mercer and just going through some of the decision-making processes ahead of the seeding process this season. I know a few of you are already underway, but others are yet to kick off, and Evan, one of those. 29 past 12 here on the Country Hour. Jacob Kagi is in the studio. Jacob, what's making news headlines?
Blinder, in the news this hour, the Prime Minister says Australia has secured a supply contract for another 20 million doses of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine. The announcement follows new health advice that the Pfizer jab is the preferred vaccine for Australians under 50 years of age, after the AstraZeneca vaccine was linked to a small number of rare blood clotting cases around the world. Australia had already secured 20 million doses from Pfizer, but only 1 million have arrived so far. The WA government is relaxing its coronavirus restrictions from midnight tomorrow. Capacity limits will be lifted to 100% at certain WA venues with fixed seating, including Perth Stadium. The Premier Mark McGowan says the 75% capacity limit at restaurants, cafes and clubs with dedicated seating and the 2-square metre rule for pubs and bars will remain for now but is under review. And emergency services say anyone holidaying or camping between Coral Bay and Geraldton needs to make immediate plans to leave after a blue alert was issued for tropical cyclone Seroja. The alert is in place for anyone between Coral Bay and Lancelin, and those in the area should start preparing for dangerous weather. Officials say people should leave as soon as possible, as major roads may be closed in the coming days. We'll have more news at 1 o'clock.
Jacob, thank you so much for that update. This is the Country Hour on ABC WA. It is 12:30, and between now and the news at 1 o'clock, you'll meet some of the youngsters who are trying their best. They're doing some potty riding. They're trying to hold on as long as they possibly can and trying to be just like some of their rodeo superstars that they idolise. You'll make your way to the Kimberley shortly before the news at 1. Also, taking a look at the weather in just a moment or two, going through that quite unusual situation where you've got two tropical cyclones just off the coast of Western Australia. And Luke Huntington's going to go through those details for you very shortly. 29 to 1.
G'day, this is Lightning, chipping away on stage 2 of the Ord Irrigation Scheme, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
And just before getting into the weather, crossing to get the latest information from Luke Huntington, just got a call through from Jerem Critch from Plan Farm, who you heard from right at the top of the show today. He just called in to clarify some of those price discounts caused by the shipping delays that we've been talking about for the last couple of days here on the Country Hour. The current discounts, so that $20 to $30 a tonne, are to the old season grain only, and there is only about a 10% of that left to sell. So just if you were crunching some numbers there at home, just wanted to make that point really clear. The current discounts of $20 to $30 a tonne are for the old season grain only, and there's only about 10% of that left to sell. So a little bit of good news, I guess, in that. 27 to 1. Catching up now with Luke Huntington from the Bureau of Meteorology. And Luke, let's start in the north because two cyclones off the coast of Western Australia. What's the story this afternoon and how do you think it's going to unfold?
Yeah, that's right. As you mentioned, two cyclones have formed off the northwest coast there. So we've got Tropical Cyclone Odette, which formed earlier this morning, and, of course, Tropical Cyclone Seroja as well. So Odette this morning was located about 1,000 kilometres northwest of Exmouth, and it's currently moving east-northeast about 20 kilometres per hour. Now, that's going to go north of Seroja and then come back around it and then head towards the sort of the Exmouth Cape there during Saturday afternoon. So, but by the time it reaches sort of offshore waters off Exmouth, it would have weakened back into a low pressure system. So before it does get down there, it won't be a cyclone, but there will be some impacts from that low or that ex-tropical cyclone once it does move offshore from the Exmouth coast there. Namely, damaging winds with gusts to 90 kilometres an hour are possible around the Exmouth to Coral Bay region during Saturday afternoon or evening, just as that system does pass to the west. So we do have a severe weather warning for those damaging winds covering that area, as I said, during Saturday afternoon and into the early evening. So it'll be just a very brief period of that potential for damaging winds. And we've also got, of course, Tropical Cyclone Saroja, which is Category 1 at the moment. And this morning it was around about 540 kilometres northwest of Exmouth, moving southwestwards at about 18 kilometres per hour. It looks like it's going to gradually intensify during the next couple of days, potentially coming Category 2 during Saturday morning, and then later on Saturday increasing further to a Category 3 system. And on Sunday, we'll start seeing the system move southeastwards and head towards the central west coast. So for Saroja, we do have a tropical cyclone. Watch out for that. For areas between Coral Bay and Lancelin, those areas could see some gales develop during Sunday afternoon and evening. And then those gales will extend inland into the wheat belt and the southern goldfields during Monday. But of course, it looks like the most likely crossing of the system will be somewhere between Carnarvon and Jurien Bay. Looks like it may cross as a Category 2 system between that area. And near the cyclone path there could be destructive winds in excess of 125 kilometres per hour, heavy to intense rainfall, which could lead to flash flooding During Sunday and Monday. And of course, you've got some abnormally high tides, which could cause some minor flooding near the coast between Coral Bay and Lancelin. But the main area for the more serious flooding will probably be in the Denham and Shark Bay region as it goes through. So once it does cross the coast late Sunday or early Monday morning, it will head towards sort of inland areas through the wheat belt and the southern goldfields. So even those areas should watch out for some potential warnings coming through. So there could be some sort of damaging winds even as far as inland as the wheat belt as it moves through, and some heavy rainfall associated with that. So close to the cyclone centre, we could see rainfall around that 50 to 80 millimetres, maybe some isolated totals up to 100 as it moves through. So that'll be through the central west region, and even into the central wheat belt you could get falls up to 50 to 80 millimetres, just depending how it holds together as it moves through. And then we've got some rainfall coming into the southwest land division associated with that. So for that area, we'll probably see rainfall start to increase during Sunday from the northwest. And anywhere in that sort of the southwest land division could receive around the 20 to 30 millimetres on the Sunday. And even on the Monday, as Saroja passes to the north, there could be another 20 to 30 millimetres through that area. So looks like some good significant rainfall throughout the southwest land division as it does pass to the north. But of course, it'll depend on where the actual path of the cyclone goes. So there's a lot happening weather-wise.
There sure is. And I know we're a few days out from sort of all the action. But when you look at the track at the moment, can you, in that southwest land division area where that rain might fall, and you talked about some sort of figures like 50 to 80 millimetres, in that southwest land division, where does it look likely at this point, if you can name some regions or towns through that patch?
So the cyclone itself... It's going to most likely cross through the central west region. So the central west region is definitely sort of the bullseye at the moment for those heavier falls. And then as it moves southeastwards, it'll get into that sort of central wheat belt area. It's probably going to be more the sort of the northern and northeastern parts of the central wheat belt at this stage, and through sort of the northern central west. So anywhere sort of Kalbarri, Geraldton, Dongara, Morowa, Dalwallinu, Meriden, Southern Cross, those type of areas will probably most likely see the heaviest rainfall with that cyclone moving through that area.
Yeah, I know it's only early, so it's just a bit of an idea of where things might go at this point. So beyond sort of Monday then, looking into Monday, Tuesday, what's the situation right across the state then from the north through to the south then, Luke?
Yeah, so Sunday and Monday will be the worst days. The cyclone will dissipate sometime during Monday as it moves inland, and then by Tuesday, the remnants of it will most likely go through the southeastern parts of the state, so through the Eucla there. And it looks like there's a good southerly flow coming in behind it, so we'll have some cooler than normal temperatures that we've been seeing lately over the southwest land division. So temperatures probably in the low teens to low 20s throughout, but the showers will probably most likely confined to the south coast, just in that onshore southerly flow. And then up north, we could still see some showers and thunderstorms throughout the Pilbara region, the interior, and through northeastern parts of the Gascoyne continuing. And into Wednesday, we'll see a ridge develop near the south coast, so that'll clear a lot of the rainfall out of the south of the state, and we'll just be left with some remnant showers and thunderstorms over the Pilbara and the interior region. Maybe just some isolated thunderstorms and showers around the far north Kimberley, but most of the rainfall will after the system goes through will be in that Pilbara sort of interior Gascoyne region.
And you mentioned some of the strong winds, sort of the damaging winds sort of on that Exmouth Peninsula, maybe 90 to 100 kilometres an hour. That's sort of tomorrow afternoon. Any other places around the state expecting sort of strong winds like that?
Not as high as sort of the damaging stage. For today, we've got some strong winds along the Pilbara coast west and just along the west, basically all of the west coast. We do have that gale warning for that Ningaloo and Gascoyne coast. That'll be associated with that ex-ODEP by that stage moving through during the afternoon period. And, just some remnants of the strong wind warning probably through parts of the west coast tomorrow. So the next sort of 24 hours is the main impacts from the wind will be mostly from that system moving through the Exmouth area tomorrow afternoon.
All right. Now, a lot of the focus has been on what lies ahead in the next few days. So is there anything of note to mention in this afternoon into tomorrow anywhere around the state, Luke?
So outside of that, today we're seeing some showers and thunderstorms over the western Pilbara area, and that'll continue into tomorrow as well. They could be quite gusty if you do get a thunderstorm over that area. We're talking about areas sort of west of Port Hedland, close to the coast there, right down to Coral Bay, Carnarvon. And the southern half of the state, we've got a ridge coming in, quite a strong ridge coming in, so those easterly is going to be quite fresh and gusty all along the sort of the west coastal areas overnight tonight and into tomorrow morning. So I think that'll be the sort of the main impacts for the next 24 hours.
And just recapping those warnings then for this afternoon?
Yeah, so we have those tropical cyclone warnings out, particularly that advice out or the watch out for the TC Saroja, the severe weather warning for those damaging winds for the Exmouth to Coral Bay region for tomorrow afternoon. I think that is it. We do have also a flood watch out for the Warramal, Murchison and Graniff River catchments, just in anticipation of that heavy rainfall moving through on Sunday and Monday.
Luke, there was a lot to get through. You've done well. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
17 to 1.
You're listening to ABC Radio and there's a cyclone in your area.
Cyclones can bring heavy rain and widespread flooding to your region. Just 30 centimetres of flowing water can take control of your four-wheel drive. When you see a flooded road, stop. It only takes a small amount of water to shut off your engine, which can lock your power doors and windows and leave you trapped in your car. Remember, it's okay to drive away.
16 to 1. On to the rainfall figures now. Looking back at the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning, checking 5 mils and over. For northern and eastern forecast districts in the Pilbara, Karratha Aero 37 and Onslow Airport 5. On the islands, Varanus Island 11. For the southwest land division, southern coastal region, Bremer Bay 16, Chessalon 12, Esperance 5, Gardner 19, Gardner Deepherd 6, Hopetoun North 45, Jacup 18, Jerramungup 20, King River 21, Many Peaks 6, Metla 16, Mount Barker 5, Munglinup 8, Munglinup West 25, Nyarlup 5, Ongerup 5, Tamar 8, The Duke had 17, Warrajarra 27, Wellstead 6, and Windrush had 10. And then in the Great Southern, Mount Madden East had 8 in the gauge. This is the Country Hour. 12:45, no wool market today. That's due to, I think it was the Easter break. There was a couple of weeks break or something. It may be back next week. I may stand corrected on that, but I think that's the case. So no wool market today is the short version of that story anyway. Now, with this tropical cyclone expected to cross the coast Sunday night, the Department of Fire and Emergency Services is asking you, if you're on holidays and if you're in the storm's path, to basically pack up and head home now. District Coordinator with the DFES Incident Management Team is Todd Pender. He's in Geraldton just to help manage the situation over the weekend. And he said travellers need to head north or south today to avoid traffic problems tomorrow.
We want to get a message out to people out to the community at the moment in preparation for the onset of the tropical cyclone. We're expecting it to start impacting the coast Sunday through to Monday. Some of our concerns are around some of the holiday makers that are probably in the area from Coral Bay through to Geraldton. What we're asking is people need to start making preparations to leave now. Our concerns are if people leave it till Saturday, yes, that is going to be a very large volume of traffic on the road at once, which then starts to cause other issues. So this cyclone is coming. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about it. It's not like the movies. And so we're asking holiday makers to start making those preparations today and leave the area. If you're far enough north and you need to head north, if that's your preference, otherwise start making their way back towards Perth.
So, Todd, you're saying people to make that decision now, don't leave it all till late tomorrow and cause chaos on the roads.
Yeah, so that's one of the things we will be working with WA Police, is to make sure the roads are monitored and main roads, because of that increase in traffic where people are, you know, it is unfortunate having to cut your plans short, and we can't apologise around that, because there's not much we can do, but we are urging people where they can just to start making those plans now.
Todd Pender from the DFES Incident Management Team speaking to Glenn Barnden. 12:50, and the Mid West Ports Authority is pretty busy at the moment getting in place its safety procedures. It's basically the authority's own special version of tying down the trampoline and putting away the garden furniture ahead of the weather expected over the weekend. Tropical cyclone Saroja is expected to bring destructive winds, very heavy rainfall and higher than normal tides as it crosses the WA coast, somewhere between sort of Carnarvon and Durian Bay. So the port in Geraldton is right in the middle of that section of the coast. Acting Chief Executive of the Mid West Ports Authority, Damien Tully, says the harbour will be evacuated in plenty of time.
So Mid West Ports is closely monitoring the situation. We're working with local agencies such as DFES to ensure that we've got all the information that we need. We are preparing the port and also the vessels in and around the port for the fact that this heavy weather will come this way.
What sort of risk does a storm like this pose?
There's a fair bit of risk involved with cyclones, mainly due to their unpredictability. For that reason, we're taking a very cautious approach to the way that we're treating this cyclone. That will mean that we will be stopping shipping operations early, evacuating the harbour and then evacuating the anchorages well in time before the cyclone actually makes landfall in Geraldton.
When are you planning to do that?
So the harbour will be evacuated at 2 p.m. on Saturday, and we plan to evacuate the anchorages at 6 p.m. on Saturday. This will give enough time for those vessels to get enough sea room between them and the cyclone and ensure that they're safe.
Okay, so that's the vessels leaving the inner harbour?
Yes, that's correct, the commercial harbour and also the anchorages.
What sort of tidal surges are you expecting?
We're not expecting any storm surges that have been told to us at this stage. We are expecting a normal surge of around about 10 centimetres. We're waiting to get further briefings from DFES later this afternoon and also tonight. I suppose the thing to emphasise is that we're taking a very cautious approach to ensure that those vessels are clear of that surge.
And is it just the vessels that you're worried about, or is there any infrastructure on the actual dry side in the port itself?
Yeah, so we've got three main priorities that we're looking at, and that's firstly it's safety of personnel. So we're going to make sure that there's no personnel that are going to be in those areas while the storm is occurring, and also the seafarers by evacuating the anchorage. Secondly, we'll protect the infrastructure, such as the ship loaders, by ensuring that they're essentially tied down, and anything that's loose around the port we go and tie down well before the time so that we know that it will still be there after the storm has come through. And then thirdly, our third priority is to recommence shipping. This may involve having to do a hydrographic survey of the channel just to ensure that there are no rocks or big lots of sand that have entered the channel before the ships come back.
Oh, how long does that take?
It mainly takes a couple of hours to do a rough run in the boats with the equipment to ensure that there is nothing extra. Because we survey the channels so regularly on a 6-monthly basis, we've got a very good idea of what it looks like. And then if there's anything extra, we'll then be able to assess it very quickly as to whether that's going to affect shipping or not.
When you're evacuating, where do those vessels go?
When the vessels are told to evacuate the anchorage or the inner harbour, they will set their own navigation plan as to best avoid the cyclone. So those mariners have been trained how to avoid cyclones, and a lot of the time they will be receiving information from their shipping companies as to best avoid the cyclone as well.
Do they go very far, do you know?
Their distance away from the port will really depend on their safety systems and what their companies sort of dictate. Obviously, they will go far enough, but not far enough that they'll be able to return in time once shipping recommences in Geraldton.
Acting Chief Executive of the Mid West Ports Authority, Damien Tully with Lucinda Jose. 9 to 1, and this text just in from David Burton, who's the Shire of Kendinnan Acting CEO, and wanted to let you know that due to the predicted severe fire danger, due to the forecast of strong winds from TC Saroja and TC Odette, the Shire of Kendinnan is issuing instructions for no open fire or burning from, well, today, Friday the 9th of April, until Monday the 12th of April. And I guess that's kind of a heads up in case you're planning on doing anything like that, just to maybe get in touch with your local shire to make sure a decision like that hasn't been made. Better to have that information handy. 8 to 1, 8 minutes away from the news at 1. You are off to the Kimberley now, where some of the youngest rodeo hopefuls have been learning the ropes at a potty riding and stock handling school in Kununurra. For aspiring cowboys and cowgirls, potty riding is often the first step to learning how to balance on the back of a bucking beast. Junior riders hang on to the potty calf for as long as possible, just like their bull riding heroes. Courtney Fowler drove over to the Kununurra rodeo grounds just to watch the little rodeo stars in action.
My name's Hayden and I'm 10 and I am from Perth.
Is this your first time riding potties today?
No.
Done this before?
Yeah.
How do you find it?
I find it quite a little bit tricky because it's hard to get on them because they could kick you off or like when you go up to pat them or like train them.
What's the trick to staying on, do you think? Because it looks a bit tricky to balance.
You want to put your hand under a bit of rope, wrap it around like a wrap. Hold on to it tight, move forward so you're onto the rope, and then you put your hand up and then you stop moving on the bull.
And then you kind of look a bit like a professional bull rider, don't you?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Jack.
Another Jack. We've got two Jacks.
And I'm Holly.
And Holly. Yeah. And Will. Holly.
And I just did stock handling, now I'm doing bull riding.
How did you find the stock handling?
Fun.
Do you do that a lot at home? Where are you from?
I'm from Kununurra and live out in Paxhurtle.
Oh, do you? Do you have horses and stuff at home?
No, but we have a couple of cows.
You do? Yeah. How do you find handling the cattle?
Fun.
Not scary?
No, because they're trained.
And you're about to hop on one of the potties, is that?
Can
Something you've done before?
Yeah, I did it yesterday and all the other rodeos.
How did you find the ride?
Good. Yesterday I did 4 good rides. The last one, on my 5th, I fell off in the chute and it landed on top of me.
Oh my goodness.
So my leg hurts.
You're very brave. Do you ride in a lot of rodeos?
Most of them.
Really? How many have you done?
I've done all the Kununurra ones since I was only 4. And my first time was when I was 3 turning 4.
So the potty was bigger than you?
Yeah, much bigger.
Do you just do the potty rides? Is that what you do?
Yes. I sometimes ride the steers, but not normally.
Do you want to try and do rodeo when you grow up?
And yep. Here's the world's famous rodeo cow.
Yeah.
How about you guys? Do you live in town?
I live on the same road.
Every day we ride down.
Every day you ride?
Nearly every day.
They've both got cows.
And we both got motorbikes.
And we both like bull riding. And we both like everything.
When you get on the potty, how long do you have to stay on there for?
When you're big, like an adult,
yeah.
You do it for 8 seconds. When you're
8 seconds.
When you're a little kid, you do it for 6 seconds.
Did you stay on the potty for 6 seconds, do you reckon?
No, because
8 seconds.
The potty just flung me off and made me do a belly flop and gave me a headache.
How are you feeling? A bit sore?
Yeah, my head's a bit sore.
How old are you, Will?
10.
Do you want to do rodeos when you're older?
Don't know yet.
Will!
Because I got 2 things that I want to be when I'm older.
Oh, what's that?
A bull rider and an AFL player. I don't know how am I going to choose or not.
I can't wait to see you ride again. Who's up next?
I'm here for the potty riding school and the camp draft school. I'm from Roebuck Train Station and I'm Aaron.
Do you ride a lot at home? Out at Roebuck?
Yes.
Do you have a potty calf at home?
Yeah, our sister owns 60 potty calves.
60 potty calves. Do you know all their names?
No, I don't remember them all.
Do some of them have names?
Yes, all of them have names.
They all do?
Yeah.
All 60? My goodness. And do you get to ride the potties at home?
Please? Yes.
So this isn't the first time you've had a go at riding one of these?
Yeah.
And that's your brother over here? What's your name, buddy?
Justin.
And Justin, how old are you?
10.
And have you had a go this morning on the potty?
Yep.
And you've done some stock handling as well?
We weren't here yesterday, so I didn't get to have a go at stock handling, so yeah.
But you know a bit about that from home?
Yeah.
What's important when you're handling stock?
To make sure that I have a little bit of space and go around them and keep an eye on them.
Yeah, because they're a bit bigger than you, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they're still scared of me.
Do you reckon do you guys like the rodeo? Do you want to learn how to ride bulls when you're older?
Yeah. I want to be a professional bull rider.
Really?
Yeah.
That'd be so cool. Well, I can't wait to see you ride. Hey, what's your name?
My name's Nevaeh.
And are you having a go today on the potties?
Yeah, I've already had a go.
How was it?
Terrifying.
Terrifying? Did you manage to stay on for a little bit?
Yeah.
Do you live in Kununurra? Where are you from?
I'm from Broome.
Do you have cows at home?
No, I don't. I live in a unit.
So is this a new experience for you?
Yes.
Do you think you'll have another go, even though it was a bit scary?
Yeah, maybe.
How did you go?
Good.
What was your name again?
Amber.
Where are you from?
Broome.
So you travel a little way?
Yeah.
And I saw you just had a go at the potty.
Yeah.
You stayed on pretty well.
Yeah.
Was that your first time?
Second.
And do you reckon you'll have another go?
Yes. I'm doing the Gymkhana on Saturday.
Oh, that's awesome. So you ride horses?
Yeah.
What's your favourite horse event?
I like cam drafting.
How different is it riding the potty to the horse?
It's different, yeah.
School holiday adventures. Young Amber ending that report from Courtney Fowler at the Kununurra Rodeo Grounds. And the Little Rodeo Stars holiday program was hosted by the Kununurra Camp Draft and Rodeo Association, which is also putting on a mini rodeo and camp draft competition at the
rodeo grounds on Saturday, so tomorrow. If you'd like to see some of the Kimberley's young cowboys and cowgirls in action, you can head along to the ABC's Kimberley Facebook page. A minute away from the news at one.
Hello, I'm Sally Sara. Join me for The World Today. National Cabinet meets as questions are raised over the safety of the AstraZeneca vaccine. What will it mean for the COVID-19 vaccination rollout? And we go to South Australia, where a mental health expert is sacked after accusing the state government of negligence. Professor John Mendoza warns that lives are at risk due to a lack of funding. Those stories and more from across the country and around the globe coming up on The World Today.
Really good to catch up with you this Friday afternoon on ABC WA. It is time for the news, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.